Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, everyone, a Merry Christmas. It's Christmas Day. How did that happen? Welcome to the 12th episode of Watch Alongmas. Every day in the run-up to the weirdest Christmas in the history of all Christmases, we have been watching some pretty mixed bag of professional wrestling shenanigans. And it's either been myself with Justin Henry, myself with Matthew Gregg, or Matthew Gregg and Justin Henry together. But for Christmas Day, it falls, it is myself and Justin Henry. Merry Christmas, Justin.
Merry Christmas to you, Tom.
Are you having a lovely Christmas day so far? Have you had all the turkey or not?
Well, it's so far so good, but understand that what we're about to watch, and I don't know, Christmas might be petering a little bit, but we're going to find out soon.
I'm excited for this one because we have decided, in the spirit of the Cultaholic Classic Raw review that turned 2 years old this year, we are going to go back to the beginning and we are going to do a special watch along of episode one of Monday Night Raw in all its glory. Justin, we watched that, at least 104 weeks ago. Can you remember anything from it?
It was the summer of 2018. I just remember it was the first time we ever worked together and we didn't know how this was going to go. And we've watched, of course, you know, outside of the podcast, many episodes of Raw since then, you know, just in our private lives. And it was very stark just how different things were in 1993. And if we didn't remember off the top of our heads, we got a harsh reminder just from watching the show.
We said
it was
did.
The bits are real.
Well, let's revisit some old times, but let's not do it alone. Obviously, Matthew Gregg is spending Christmas in prison, so he can't be with us today. He's not in prison, just to reassure you. But it is Justin Henry and myself and a special guest, as determined by the random guest generator. Let's hit play on this bad boy and see who comes out.
Randomly generating guests. Unexpected item in the bagging area. Now uploading, Rob Bartlett.
Oh, I think it's broken, Justin. It just said Rob Bartlett.
Well, he was one of the commentators on the first show. Is that broken?
I think it might be. Who's there? It's not Rob, is it?
I don't know when it's. I'm pressing a button, but I don't know what's going on. Well, what does it say in the directions?
Rob Bartlett.
Who?
Rob Bartlett, is that you?
Who are you?
Oh,
how did I? What is? Where am I? I got this internet camera thing for Christmas, and I was hitting the button, seeing if it works.
I don't know
what I'm watching. What is this?
Well,
How did you do that?
I ain't got a Scooby-Doo how I did that, but we are joined via the random guest generator by Rob Bartlett. Actual Rob Bartlett.
How do you know my name? This is...
Mate, you're a legend
like
round here.
What?
You're a legend round here.
A legend?
You're a legend.
For what?
On the Cultaholic Classic Raw review, you were the one of the first voices on the longest running episodic TV show ever, and we've talked in such great tones about your time there. And hey, since you're here, since it's Christmas, should we watch Monday Night Raw together, Rob?
I can't get away from this. It's been like 50 years since I did this. It follows me like a stalker. It's just, I can't ever get away from it. It's just, this thing will haunt me for the rest of my life.
What if we were to make this less haunting and we watch Raw together? Because Tom and I have a lot of questions about
don't know why. The number one being why? Why?
If you have 45 minutes on this blessed Christmas day, perhaps we can sort things out together and learn a little bit about your time with the WWF, however short it may have been.
Hang on a second. When's dinner? All right. Do I have 45 minutes? Okay. All right. Yes. Yes, I will be drinking heavily.
That's what Christmas is all about.
But I'm also setting up what I'm going to need after this is over.
We are going to watch Monday Night Raw from 1993. Just go to the very first episode of Monday Night Raw. We'll give you time to fire up the WWE Network and line that up to watch along with us right now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Justin Henry, are you ready to watch Monday Night Raw?
As I'll ever be.
This feels really weird coming out of my face right now. Rob Bartlett, are you ready to watch Monday Night Raw?
No, but I have my choice. I'm already here. I said I would. So it's Christmas. I guess in the true spirit of Christmas, I can... What's the name of this episode? The Ego Crush?
That's a drink, isn't it? We're going to watch Raw. You watch along with us. We'll press go on three in 3, 2, 1, a go. Here we go, then.
Nice shot of the Manhattan skyline.
Mm-hmm. In Manhattan Center.
You're in there right now, Rob. What's going through your head at this moment?
Juan Mooney. I'm watching. I'm inside, obviously, and I'm watching on the monitor, ringside, and I'm watching Bobby, the late, great Bobby the Brain Heenan. They fashioned this... this storyline where Bobby thought he was going to be one of the hosts of Raw, and he's trying to get in, and Sean says it's sold out, he can't. And so throughout the evening, Bobby dresses up in different costumes to try and fool Sean Mooney and get in to see Raw. And he doesn't know who I am, nor is he happy about the idea that I've gotten the gig instead of him. So I'm inside. At this point, I would say the sphincter is on full pucker. And, although it's going to get a lot tighter as the evening progresses, because this is just painful. There they are. I mean, it was electric to be in that room with all these people, and and there is the prefet Robbio.
Oh, there he is.
Randy.
When I had hair and it was dark.
Yeah, we have to say this because we can see this on the Zoom. Rob Bartlett is sporting a beautiful Christmas beard at the moment.
Yes, thank you.
I like the flat cap as well. You're looking very Yorkshire today, Rob.
Well, I figured, you know, I should make an attempt, you know, to...
humor the Englishman in the room.
I thought perhaps you were going as Bruce Arians for Halloween.
Yeah. Now, I thought it would be really funny for me to mispronounce some of the names of the wrestlers. So I think I call Yokozuna Yokozuma. But I also think that Mr. Fuji calls him Yokozuna, if I'm not mistaken. But everyone uses that as an example of how stupid I was. Coco, beware.
Correct.
Wearing the semi-cheap trick inspired costume. Coco, beware, who not too many people know this, played Arnold in What's Happening.
He grew up beautifully.
He did, didn't he? And you never
know. Was there anybody that you met on the night, Rob, that you struck up a good chemistry with, a good friendship with in the weeks that followed?
Oh, I without a doubt, Randy, Macho Man Randy Savage and Bobby the Brain, those two guys were among the sweetest, loveliest, most terrific people I've ever known. I mean, God bless them both. But they could not be more welcoming or doing whatever they could to try and help me fit in. You know, they were just the best. They were just the best. They're missed terribly. So great. So great. And there were a lot of people involved in the organization who were just, Kevin Dunn, who's the producer. I don't know if he's still with WWE, but
yeah, he's still the producer.
He's another great guy. Yeah, I mean, I just said that the makeup lady, I think her name was Sharon, everybody there could not be nicer. Gorilla Monsoon was a sweetheart. They all were really terrific people. Really great. Really, really great.
Now, going back prior to this, this is your first time on the air with WWF.
Yes.
Was there any sort of dry run with Vince whatsoever where you kind of got to maybe flesh out your chemistry a bit?
Yeah, he had me come up to Stamford to the headquarters to take a few meetings, and then we went over to their recording facility, which is on the other side of 95 from where their building or their building is on the east side of the highway heading north, and then the west side there's an office complex, and they had like a warehouse basically that had a whole bunch of studios in it. And we sat in a control room and they played a couple of matches and we did the play-by-play along with it. And it was kind of clear at that point that this was not going to be going well because I mean, my son was really into wrestling at the time. I didn't know much about it. And one of the reasons I took the gig was because, you know, my son felt really cool that his father was, and there's a great shot for you, huh? you can see what he had for breakfast. You know, at one point, they're doing the play-by-play, and I'm kind of reserved in the back. I'm really not sure what to say. And Vince is going, no, anytime you want to jump in, Rob. And he might have known at that point this was not a wise move.
Because it's a big leap, isn't it, to go, like, from the work that you did. Like, talk to us about how you got the gig in the first place, because you were telling us very briefly there how Vince ended up offering you the job.
Vince is a guy and the whole organization, and it's kind of cool to know that they still do it. They do more for charity than almost any other entity I've ever been involved with. They, every week, they have, you know, a whole team of their celebrities go into children's hospitals and they show up and make a wish deals and benefits, and they do so much for charity. I was doing a benefit for the Connecticut Special Olympics. They had like a dinner or banquet or something, and then an auction. And they used to hire me as a MC, you know, do a little bit of my stand-up act, and then I would do an auction, whatever. And it was a lot of fun. Met a lot of cool people, you know. And this particular evening, it was, you know, all set up with tables, and Vince and his lovely wife were sitting at the front table, and I was, you know, at the podium, about, you know, 10 feet, 12 feet from him. And he decided for some reason that night to wear a three-piece velour peach-colored suit. And I did about 40 minutes just on the suit, much to the crowd's delight. And, you know, to his credit, you know, he went along with it. You know, later on, I found out that he wasn't too keen on jokes at his expense, but he saw the crowd reaction and he thought, you know what, there may be something in here. And so I got a call I was going home from IMUS, and his assistant called me, because that's how I got into the Connecticut Special Olympics, was through IMUS. And Vince said, how'd you like to do, you know, how'd you like to work on TV, do a live TV show every night from Manhattan? I have this idea called the Monday Night Raw, and, you know, here's what it's going to be, and what do you think? I said, sure, you know, it sounds like it could be fun. And so I did it. And it took me 13 weeks to realize it was, you know, one of those things where it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I think Vince was kind of looking for getting a morning radio personality who was up on current events, seeing that it was going to be live. He thought that stand-up comedy, you know, a stand-up comedian would be able to work well. And another one might have worked much better than me, because I'm, you know, I do a lot of characters in my act, so I would go into voices and whatnot. And at one point, I think during this particular show, I do Mike Tyson, who's on trial or in jail at that point for rape. So that was a really smart move on my part to choose that voice to do at that particular time. I think I actually said about Yokozuna, I said, that's one big Oriental, Vince, something along those lines. So it's just at that point, you know. There's another podcast, I think it's Old Time Wrestling. A couple of guys out of Ireland do one.
Old School Wrestling, OSW.
Old School Wrestling. And they, at one point, they were watching Raw, the first episode, and they, I think the quote from them was, you know, and how do we have Vince McMahon and Macho and Randy Savage, and who the hell is this cunt? And then Rob Bartlett will spend the rest of the watch along just destroying me. Just destroying me. I thought gum chewing was going to be my little hook, and the sunglasses. And you could see they really spent no expense in hiring the Raw girls. She looks like one of the Rhea sisters, you know. there's Ghana, Paya, and Daya. On, anyway.
Well, Rob, I was going to ask, you had mentioned how Vince wanted to go with a radio personality in terms of topical matters and mm-hmm. and just a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, he hires Todd Pettengill from WPLJ, along with Scott Shannon. I was just wondering, because Vince, I think, may have had a vision at this point for what he wanted out of topical announcers or on-screen personalities. Was there any sort of direction he gave you in that sort of field for what he wanted?
I mean, to his credit, he wanted me to do my thing, you know, because it had worked so well at the dinner. I think part of the problem was you can't be over the top about something that's already over the top. And it's hard to make fun of something that everyone takes really seriously. I mean, everyone knows what the deal is, but everyone takes the fans take it really, really seriously, as well they should, because I got to tell you, I've never seen athleticism like I saw when I was there, because these guys could just go. There was one match, I can't remember who it was with, it was towards the end of my run, where it went on through two commercial breaks. It just continued. And I just, that kind of stamina, that kind of strength is just, you know, amazing to me. But Vince just kind of got out of my way, you know, and whatever I wanted to try, he was game. You know, at one point I thought it would be funny for me to dress up as Elvis, and I did that. But then like 2 minutes into the program, Doink the Clown came up and hit me with a pie in the face. And so all you saw for the rest of the show was, you know, shaving cream on a pompadour hairdo and sunglasses. So, and at one point I actually did Vince. He didn't know that. I did him when he was away with Randy. Accepting an award for the charity work that they do. And so it was Bobby and Gorilla, who were a great team. They were like Abbott and Costello together.
Absolutely.
I played Vince.
I said not Vince McMahon along the bottom, didn't it?
Yes.
I remember that, yeah.
And I just remember I didn't really do anything except my impression of Vince, which was, I just go out like that little come little come I'm not even going to form any words. I was just coming on Monday night.
You hit us with a water maneuver as well.
Yeah, right, sure. Right. Exactly.
What was there anything, was that quite intimidating to be, because obviously, as you say, like the Abbott and Costello of wrestling commentary there, was there any, like an intimidation factor being around Bobby and Gorilla?
Well, I wasn't intimidated, but I really admired how seamless they were. You know, they really knew, and they did, rather than focusing on the matches, I feel like they kind of turned their humor towards themselves and their relationship and stuff like that. I think that was why they were so successful, is they weren't so much about poking fun at the wrestlers or the events or anything like that. It was more about, you know, each other, you know, and Bobby having a whole slew of one-liners that he could just spit out at random, you know. Really, I mean, they were just so terrific together. They could have made it as a comedy team, for sure. No doubt in my mind. I mean, Bobby could have been a stand-up. Right? He was, you know, definitely had the personality for it. You know, the Steiner brothers, the first time I met them, or actually, maybe it was after this match, because I'm sure I said something untoward about them during the match. And so backstage, you know, in the prep area after the show, they called me over, you know, because I hadn't really met them prior to. And I went over and one of them pulled me onto his lap and then took his two fingers like this and gripped me by my Adam's apple and said, "You're really funny."
And, oh, Christ.
But needless to say, the Steiner brothers were hands off the rest of my time with WWF.
What's that? You should have seen Scott Steiner in the years after when he put on a little more muscle and started fleshing out some of those more intimidating characteristics in his on-screen persona. He became a bit more of a star at that point when, he's a charming sociopath.
As most of them were.
It's true. We're looking now at the Steiners in action. We've got Doink the Clown, or as you call him, Rob, Dork the Clown, wandering around there as well.
Yeah. I get it. Ah, my sides.
Is it... what was some of the learning curves that you had to go around, sort of moving from doing comedy and stand-up to being in an environment where everything moves so much quicker and you're reacting in a different way? How did you find that?
Well, when I'm on stage myself, and most of my act was written while I was on stage, I never used to sit down and write material. I would have an idea, and maybe an idea for one or two lines, and then just do it. And it's usually a character. And I would do it, and I just keep doing it on stage until it seemed like it was, you know, honed well enough. And then it just got longer and longer and longer and longer until it made up half my act. And then I stopped doing it. So I've always been a good crowd worker, you know, good off the top of my head. I got a lot of improv background. For some reason, none of that came to me when I was doing Raw. And part of it was, is I was so conscious about not stepping on Vince or, yeah, here's Bobby, and even dressed in drag, he's not as humiliating as I am in my street clothes, sitting behind the microphone. But I was so, you know, not really intimidated, but I was just so conscious I didn't want to step on those two because, you know, and I knew that for the most part, the camera was not going to be on us. And so, you know, again, from an audio standpoint, everyone talks at once. You can't hear anybody. And that's what I hate sometimes about radio shows is you can't, you know, Razor Ramon, there's a timely character that they didn't get letters about some of the stuff that we did. This heavy duty on the chains there.
Yeah. I mean, was there a character that you particularly remember really loving as you were discovering wrestling
I liked all of them. I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow impressed me because he would show up even when we were up at the hockey arena up in Poughkeepsie, because I think one Monday a month, Manhattan Center wasn't available. So we used to go to like this hockey arena up in Poughkeepsie. And even there, when Razor would go
not Razor, Bam Bam would go up there, he would always bring his wife and his children. He had like three really young children. Like, I think between the three of them, the oldest might have been 2 years old. So there was like an infant, an 1 year old, and just a family guy, you know, very, very serious, very, you know, disciplined. I remember Undertaker kind of really getting into character way before he needed to be in character in the ring. In the backstage area, you know, we'd always have these meetings prior to the program, and they'd have the full Ico Pro buffet laid out, which was, you know, grilled chicken, vegetables, and pasta. And the Undertaker would be in a corner with his hat off, and he would be squatting, flat-footed and squatting in a corner, looking down, so his hair was covering his head. And was that way, I don't know if he was meditating or what, but he was that way through the entire meeting. And he was that way until it was time for him to get ready to go into the ring. So that always impressed me. But, you know, it's just everyone there was like so nice. I mean, Ric Flair, Nature Boy, could not have been nicer. He called me sir. It was like, no, I should be calling you sir. You're the, you know, you're the royalty here. You know, just... they were a great group of people. They really were. And you know, I got to tell you, Vince is the P.T. Barnum for our era. You know, he really knows what audiences want, you know, and he takes chances. He's always willing to go the distance. I mean, I know that Todd Pettengill, you know, was there before me and long after I left. He did a clip show, but it was just with him. So I think that probably would have been a better setup for me rather than try to do it live, you know, because I had very little knowledge of the wrestling and the wrestlers. I would ask my son, you know, for info, just to make it seem as though I knew, you know, what the hell was going on.
Go ahead.
I became the butt of the joke, which was the natural way to go with it. And, they had an event at Madison Square Garden. And so I brought my son and a bunch of his buddies. And I thought, man, we're going to be sitting ringside. This is going to be a show off to my son, his friends. It's going to be the coolest thing in the world. And we sat about two rows from the ceiling in Madison Square Garden. And so, of course, I go down to go backstage to talk to Vince about the seats. He said, no, we're going to do this bit where I'm going to introduce you. And we're going to hit you with a spotlight. And you're going to follow you all the way down to the ring. And so... I did that, and then I got into the ring, and I was supposed to interview Giant Gonzalez. And I think his manager at the time was Harvey Whippleman.
Yes.
Okay. And Giant Gonzalez, and I was interviewing him, and I got a whole buttload of boos as I was going down and getting into the ring. And then they were making fun of New York, and I was standing up for New York, and then Giant Gonzalez grabbed me and did a Spock on my shoulder and pushed me down to my knees. And I did what was then going to be my finishing move, my patented finishing move, which is run in terror from the ring as fast as humanly possible. I did it twice. Once when Giant Gonzalez Spocked me in the middle of the ring in Madison Square Garden. And one of the last episodes I ever did when Luna Vachon and the Sensational Sherry got into a fight and ripped my clothes off.
I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, it was quite a thing. It was my signature.
So far, we're a couple matches into this show. Mm-hmm. And at this point...
Is this Damian Demento?
No, it's... this is Max Moon, actually.
Oh, Max Moon, okay.
The wrestling spaceman.
It's
live TV, and I'm sure during commercial breaks, what sort of conversations are you and Vince having? Like, are you making any adjustments? Is he trying to coach you through this?
I mean, he was trying to coach me through it, and I just don't think that I was the right choice, you know? I mean, it was completely my fault. I mean, you know, part of me was, you know, really nervous about wanting to do well, and, you know, yeah, I'm a live performer. I mean, I've done stand-up for 40 years. I've been on Broadway a number of times, and, you know, I've done live TV that live aspect of it when it comes to TV, I don't know why, but it seems different than actually doing a live stand-up act. Maybe it's because I didn't have a lot of experience doing it, but it made me nervous. You know, it really made me nervous. And I was trying to find where I fit in. And I just had a hard time. I tried for I think 13 weeks. And finally, I called up Kevin Dunn and I said, I'm really holding this thing back. This is so far beyond what I'm able to bring to it. I'm not making it any better. If anything, I'm kind of slowing it down. So I think it's best if we just kind of part ways here as friends. And Kevin had all these ideas. He wanted me to do some other stuff. He wanted me to write. I wrote a treatment for a sitcom based around a family of wrestlers, you know, in the bedroom. The mom and dad slept in a ring, and you know, they were called the Turnbuckles. And I think we were going to have Hulk was going to be in it. And then I was going to do like a Saturday Night Live sketch show with the wrestlers. And I had, you know, written a whole bunch of sketches for like Yokozuna and those guys. And but, you know, none of that actually came to fruition, unfortunately. But it was, you know, it was a great, I enjoyed my time. I was there. I really wish I had been better. I really wish that I had better. I'd done better. But.
Well, being a part of this, I know you've done a lot more in the realm of radio with IMUS. You've done, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, Broadway, 40 years of stand-up. Mm-hmm. Did this experience, what did you learn from this? Like, did this inform your career going forward in any way? Did you take anything from it that ultimately made you better as a performer?
Yeah, it might have made me think about maybe preparing a little bit more before a show. You know, maybe I could have taken the time to maybe think of some things ahead of time, maybe some material ahead of time instead of trying to go off the top of my head. You know, there's always something that you think you can do better, you know?
Sure.
And I'm, you know, I get recognized for this, and it's over 25 years, right? I mean, I get recognized for this almost more often than I do from being on a radio or Broadway. Or stand up, you know, or I mean, not as many as I get from IMUS, because IMUS used to be simulcast on TV, and but that was a radio show, and I was used to doing a radio show, so we weren't doing anything different, you know. Oh, now we have the closed captions. Yeah, I said Shawn Michaels pulled a knife.
I thought I should put these on in case we missed some. And what you say there about, oh, Michael should have pulled a knife. Like, it's actually a valid point that a lot of people who come into wrestling say. Like, I had conversations with my older brother, Jim. And remember him once saying, during the Austin McMahon rivalry, why doesn't Austin just pull a gun on him? And it's like, there is a sense of suspended disbelief that you have to kind of float around with wrestling. Right. Where, right. Like, it's everything's possible, but within these weird criteria. You know, I hate you. Anything can happen in this match, but you, as long as I hate you so much, I need to pin you for 3 seconds. Like it's in that criteria. It's very bizarre.
Oh, here I am doing my Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Up here, I'm in solitary. I'm in solitary confinement.
But Vince is having a lovely time.
Oh
as
yeah,
as you're doing it.
He's really setting me up well. He's giving me a lot to work with.
Yeah, I noticed that. He's very generous with like giving you the time to kind of showcase who you are.
And I'm just dropping the ball.
Well, I don't think you are.
I'm in the mess hall every day. Well, I don't know about that. That's always been Vince's answer to anything. I don't know any. I don't think he answered anything I ever said other than, I don't know about that, but I do know one thing. This is WWE.
Well, going back to what you mentioned about how this being 25 years old and you're amazed that people still remember it. Mm-hmm. I mean, does it really like truly surprise you when podcasts and different wrestling media reach out to you for comments or interviews based
it
on?
It gets like us, basically.
Yes.
I'm flattered. You know, I'm flattered that people even still think of me. I mean, when you look at the vast history that WWF and WWE, and I always thought that they should have had a match between a panda and like Bam Bam Bigelow to fight for the rights to the WWF But you know, when he turned into WWE, it's the fans are so loyal. I've never seen fans that are more loyal than wrestling fans. They are just, and like, but they could turn on a dime. They could just, it's so funny. They'll turn on a dime. I was hated. And then when I did the thing with Luna Vachon and Sensational Sherry, all of a sudden I got a little bit of people who were like, you know, kind of cottoning to me because they thought, oh, he's just like us. You know, he's scared. You know, it was a great time. It was a great time to be there. Unfortunately, I caught wrestling right between its two highest points. I was kind of like in the valley between the Cyndi Lauper days and then when it really took off, when there was that big divide between WWE WWF rather, and Ted Turner's organization, with that rivalry kind of permeated everything. So I got it right in the middle. Yeah, that was good for me.
It is just a fascinating time in wrestling in general with this. And that was the time that we're talking about on our podcast now, which is the new generation era, where you've got this company that had this great success and they're trying to, and it's like they're trying to find the fountain of youth again and the map's wrong and they're not quite there. And you can see like they come close with some people, but then it's not quite the and it's not until like 1997 that it really clicks again.
Yeah. I mean, they had such a huge resurgence when the whole, you know, rock and wrestling thing happened. You know, Cyndi Lauper using wrestlers in her videos and stuff like that, and going to live events. It was a good marriage. It really worked. You know, then it got MTV involved. It kind of, I think, widened the audience. I think it really took it into the mainstream more than it had been, you know. Because I remember, you know, wrestling when I was a kid, black and white, you know, watching these guys, you know, Freddie Blassie and all these guys, you know, and it was almost like a cult. And then all of a sudden it was huge. It was mainstream pop culture. And again, it's just because Vince is a genius. I mean, he really is. He knows what people want, you know. And the only mistake he ever made, that I can honestly say, was asking me to join. That was the only mistake he ever made.
Has there ever been conversations? Because they bring people back from different parts of the industry, like all the time, whether it's for appearances on TV or whether it's part of network specials. Like, has there been conversations for you to do other stuff with WWE as part of the network or anything like that?
Never been asked.
Oh, mate.
I've never been asked. I was invited, never invited to any of the anniversary shows. I've never, you know, the only people who, you know, bother me are you guys, you know, podcasts like you and Old School Wrestling and one or two others every once in a while. They just, you know, they asked me to come on and relive the humility, you know, humiliation, I should say.
I will say, I'm not buttering up when I say this. Embarrassing commercials like this, no matter how bad you may have felt you were on commentary, you were still way more entertaining than what we're looking at on the screen right now.
These are so weird.
I every time a new wrestling game would come out, I would hope, you know, especially the Raw wrestling games, I would hope that there'd be a little animated, you know, video game version of me, and it never was. Damian Demento, he is a painter now.
Is he?
Yeah, I've seen some of his paintings on Facebook. He's not happy with me because he thinks that I was instrumental in ruining his wrestling career by making
really? Fun of
him, and no one took him seriously. And so I do not want to upset him.
I mean, with all due respect, I've seen his art.
His paintings are interesting. they're a little scary like him, but
a bit abstract perhaps.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. And I really liked his paintings, really, really. If you're there out there, I really really liked your painting.
How did you hear that there's heat between you and Demento? How did that
I think he sent me a Facebook message.
Oh gosh!
You know, thanks to you, or he posted, and I think it was after I did Sean Mooney's podcast where we did the first episode watch along. You know, he ruined my wrestling career. He didn't take me seriously. You know, unfunny and just not happy. Not happy with me.
Wowzers.
Let me just take this opportunity to apologize for anything that he might have perceived as my input in destroying his wrestling career. I always thought this guy looked a lot like Davy Jones from the Partridge Family. if Davy Jones' mullet was a little longer, he would have looked like... This is Marty Jannetty, right?
It is indeed, yeah. Another guy with a very interesting current life. Lots of weird stuff going on with Marty Jannetty in 2020.
Amazing. I mean, it's just...
Marty's an Oliver Stone movie waiting to happen.
That's a great shout. That is a great shout.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
When you were apologizing to Demento then, I thought you were going to do the proper wrestling style apology of, I want to say sorry for not doing it sooner.
Did you ever have any interactions
Bob Backlund? This is Bob Backlund, right? That was Bob Backlund for a second?
Yes.
I don't think he knew all the time what was going on. You know, I don't think he seemed to like not be in on the joke or something. There was always something about him. I didn't know whether he got pile driven too many times or what, but he just seemed to be a little postage due, we like to say.
Little postage due. That's a great turn of phrase.
Yeah, he eventually worked in some of that craziness and it was on screen persona, and there are times when Tom and I have wondered just how much of that is play acting and just how much of that is just him being natural. So I think there's maybe something to what you're saying there.
The lines are very blurred.
I think for the most part, like any actor would do, there's always some of you in what you're doing, no matter what character you're playing. You know, like I've played lawyers on Law and Order and The Good Wife, and then I played a police captain in Elementary for couple of episodes, and there's always a little bit of me in the character, because I mean, that's how you ostensibly make it real, you know. And you have these really larger than life characters that are over the top. They're still based in a certain amount of reality. I mean, Yokozuna's ass is that big, so you know, that's his asset, you might say. It's easy for him to bring in. I used to get mistaken for the Undertaker's manager.
For Paul Bearer.
I used to get mistaken for Paul Bearer a lot.
Is that why you grew the beard?
I think it was instrumental in my growing the beard, because Paul Bearer was really funny. Really funny backstage. Just a really, like, and he always would do the voice. This is great.
Did you find that a strange circumstance? Because at least from my tiny experience in it, like a lot of times when you go backstage, even when you're backstage, a lot of people are, you talked about The Undertaker, like backstage, a lot of people are always on. Like, is that a weird thing to cut through, especially when you're quite new?
No, I mean, you kind of get used to people being, you know, getting into character, you know. I did a play, and Kai did a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in college, and I was McMurphy, and so my entrance was a little into the play, and the guys backstage would start getting into character as these crazy people, and so, you know, the first time it happened, it took me back a little bit. It was like, oh, I get it. No, you're getting yourself into your proper mindset to be a crazy person. Yeah, I do, you know, they were getting into character, but some of them could turn it on and off. You know, I would say Randy was pretty much the same off stage as he was on stage. Bobby, you know, was Bobby the Brain was also. This always made me laugh. Bobby the Brain. As a rabbi with payas and a beard and a hat, for some reason the entire time I was on Raw, Vince was under the impression that I was Jewish. I don't know where he got the idea, if he just assumed that all stand-up comics were Jewish. I mean, I used to play Jewish lawyers on TV. You know, I've done a lot of Jewish characters. I played Mr. Mushnick in Little Shop of Horrors on Broadway. So, I mean, maybe he thought it was typecasting, but whenever you needed a fat Jewish guy, I was the one that they used to call. And so I think he thought I was Jewish. So Bobby was dressed up as my uncle, my Uncle Moisha or something.
Do you think Bobby Heenan's somebody that could have transitioned into stand-up comedy?
Oh, absolutely. I think I said it before. I think he could have easily done stand-up. And I think he and Gorilla could have been a great team. You know, they could have been a comedy team. And, you know, a lot of times with comedy teams, they could never work alone. I don't think Gorilla could have done it on his own, but Bobby certainly could have. He was that quick and that funny. And he had the personality, you know. He was on. He was fun to be with, you know. He was on. But could not be nicer. Look, anything you need, brother, anything you need. It's like, you know.
It's lovely to hear, because there can sometimes be that impression that if you're not from the industry, it's difficult to cut through. But how many of these papers and stuff were props? I'm keen to know, because it looks like it's meant to be like a busy action center with topical stories on the top and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I think the newspaper was, you know, Vince felt comfortable with it being there, thinking that it would be something we could jump off on with or whatever. And then, you know, we used to have the rundowns, I think, on paper. And, you know, it was just set dressing, really. I don't think I ever actually went to the... At one point, I remember one of the matches was going on for a while, and I thought it would be funny to act like I was bored. And so I picked up the Times and was just sitting back and reading it, you know, and turning the page. And they never... I saw Vince say something into his headset to the booth, and then he basically told him, "Don't you shoot him reading the paper." So I never got on the air, but he pulled the greatest prank ever. I told you, you know, I did him in one of the episodes we did.
Right.
I had shoulder pads and the tuxedo jacket, and I had the makeup lady make my lips really, really big, and I had the hair the right way. And nobody had ever made fun of Vince before. I guess everyone was like really afraid of getting fired. And so I show up the next week for the show, and you know, everybody is, you know, filtering into the backstage room, you know, the staging area for the Ico Pro buffet, and a little pre-show meeting, and Vince is not there. There's a couple of minutes, and all of a sudden more people are coming in. Camera guys are coming in, and floor managers are coming in, and there's a whole bunch of people. It was packed. The room was packed. And Vince comes in. You know, everybody's chatting, but Vince comes in, dead silence. The room falls silent. And Vince looks at me, and he goes, "Bartlett! You're fired." And, you know, everybody had a big laugh, whatever. And so the next week, I show up at the Manhattan Center, and somebody met me at the door who wasn't the usual person who met me. It was some, I don't know, it was an intern or whatever. And he brought me up, and we get up to the floor. And the door opens up, and it's very, very quiet. And I kind of walked in, and there's nobody in the room. The ring isn't set up. It's just a ballroom. And I thought we had gotten off on the wrong floor, because the Manhattan Center, I guess, was an old hotel, and so there were a lot of ballrooms. No, we were in the right ballroom. They were doing the show from the hockey arena in Poughkeepsie. And he didn't tell me. So that I would show up. And then they actually shot some footage to use in a later episode, just to kind of capitalize on the fact that, but it was one of the greatest pranks ever pulled. He got me. He got me back. He got me back big time.
Amazing. That's incredible.
It's
well, here I am.
There's Paul.
I put the black stuff on my eyes. I'm telling you.
We've got your mate Damien Demento in the ring. I've two bangers from Rob Bartlett have popped out. From Demento, it looks like he had his hair cut during a power surge. And Undertaker coming out, and you're going, show your face. You've got such a pretty face.
You know what? I think those were possibly the only two good lines I came up with the entire 13 weeks I was with Raw. And I spent them all that first episode.
There was a line I remember you saying. It was during an El Matador match with at DiBiase. You were talking about what's going to do, cut his ear off and wear it as a souvenir or something, making the obvious Matador joke. And I thought it was well delivered.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of the stuff kind of went over the heads. It's not to suggest that, you know, the fans or Randy or Vince were not highly intelligent people who were completely aware of culture. but a lot of times I would make a reference that just would go, you know, it's like, whoo, almost got that one. You know, so
there's the phrase which I hear a lot in 2020, which is commit to the bit. Uh-huh. And I love the phrase, and there's a great bit of, I think it's a few weeks from here, where one of the Raw ring girls, one of the slightly larger Raw ring girls, is behind you, and Vince is like, oh, here you go, Rob. There's one for you, giving it all that. And you get up and kiss her face off, if I remember correctly. I'm like, yeah, commit to the bit. I like that. Absolutely. I think even Vince was shocked that you did. I don't know whether you said that was what you were going to do or whether
I never told him anything. I would just do it because I thought it was much easier to apologize than get permission, you know?
Sure. All right, this is... This can't be blamed on you, obviously.
No, this is not me.
My money's going to be you.
I did contribute one thing. It was a very minor thing, unfortunately. I named Friar Ferguson.
Oh!
Maybe he had two matches before he became somebody else.
Yeah, the church got involved, didn't they? They got very upset by it.
He had a monk outfit or whatever, and he had the hair, and he looked like the guy from the copier commercials. and I said, "Oh, it's Friar Ferguson," and it stuck. Vince, "Oh, it's a good one, Bart. Why can't you do that every week?" You know. Comedy is in the word comedian.
I mean, I can imagine what his name would have been before your suggestion. If it was just like the wrestling monk or something more generic than that.
I'm trying to remember. Hunka Munka maybe was one of the ones. Maybe it was
Hunka Munka sounds like.
Or Monkey.
It could have been a Vince creation. Hunka Munka.
It could have been.
Sounds like a Ben and Jerry's flavor.
Yeah. Chocolate chunks and wrestler's sweat.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
Tastes authentic.
Doink was a lot of fun at this particular point.
Yeah.
We always talk about how great that the evil clown, when they decided, oh, people like him, let's make him a good guy, that's when it went a bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, and he actually pioneered the whole scary clown thing. I don't think clowns were scary, you know, standing on street corners holding balloons to freak people out. I don't think they did that before Doink. I think Doink was one of the first.
Very much a pioneer as he was. Yeah. And as Bobby Heenan doesn't get into the building until the very, very end of the show.
Yes.
That is Monday Night Raw.
Great bit.
It was a good bit. They rolled all the way through it, I thought.
I always like Dink the Clown, which was the mini-me Doink. I always thought that was a cool little offshoot, you know, a spin-off from Doink.
They did a match where they had multiple Dinks against multiple small members of Jerry Lawler's royal family, which is a strange time. But that's we've talked about that at length, haven't we, Justin?
I think Jerry Lawler replace me, didn't he, after I left?
It was Bobby at first. Bobby Heenan.
Oh, Bobby did. Bobby did go in, and then it was Burger King.
I would say that really they moved it around a lot when you left.
Uh-huh.
And there was a rotating. So really, they never really settled on anybody after you left for a while. So take from that what you will.
They were trying to undo the damage. So I figured they had to find the right person to do that.
I think that was not the case. That was surely not the case. But so that was Monday Night Raw with Justin Henry and with Rob Bartlett. What an absolute treat to be in your company today, Rob.
You guys were the best. It's always nice when people remember me and still want to talk to me, knowing, you know, I'm kind of like Michael McDonald ruined the Doobie Brothers. I almost ruined Monday Night Raw.
You're more of a Sammy Hagar in that you brought your own spin to something.
And that's me. The Sammy Hagar of professional wrestling.
and you're better on radio than David Lee Roth.
But then against the Roth. Oof. Oof. That was painful. David Lee Roth. Oh, it was painful. It was like, is English your first language? It was just, there was nothing there, man. And he was so charismatic on MTV. And I don't know if it was years of abuse to his body or whatever, but oh, he was death on the radio. It was just.
Rob, talk to us a little bit about what you're up to at the moment. Tell people what you're doing, where they can find you, and all that good stuff.
I do a podcast when I feel like it. I've tried to do it every week, but even with quarantine and me doing absolutely nothing else with my life, I just do it infrequently. I interviewed Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, was the last one I did. I did a silly episode where it was just, it's the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. And it's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your streaming digital entertainment content. I'm teaching stand-up and acting online. It's the RB Studio, therbstudio.com. If anybody out there wants to really learn how you can be a bad wrestling announcer, or a mediocre stand-up, or an equally weak character actor on Broadway, I'm your man. Just kind of, you know, keeping busy to do, you know, I FaceTime with my granddaughter every day, just, you know, because it's just the best thing I got going for me right now. Working on some stuff. I'm working on a one-man show about quarantine. Just trying to keep. I'll be doing. Well, I guess it's Christmas, so it's not too late. If you forgot somebody, boys and girls, on your Christmas list, as a matter of fact, you could actually do it today, and I'll do it. I'm on Cameo, and I'll do shout outs to people. And for Christmas, I'm doing my Salmonella's Night Before Christmas in Brooklyn, personalized for whoever you'd like. One of the bits that I made famous on the Imus in the Morning program. "'Twas the night before Christmas in Sheepshead Bay. Kids was asleep waiting for the big day. The stockings was hung by the furnace with care in hopes that by morning they would all still be there. Me and the skank was getting ready for bed. I wore pajamas. She had a paper bag for her head." And then it kind of goes downhill from there. that's available if you would like. That special someone, a gift that you can get almost immediately and don't have to wrap. Go to cameo.com for that. But just pouring myself out however I can.
All the links that you need for everything that Rob's doing, you'll find in the description of this podcast.
Oh, you're the greatest. Why haven't I done this show before? This is just, should do this more often.
Justin, is there anything else that you'd like to ask Rob?
Well, he talks about, I mean, Rob has mentioned, you know, in very self-deprecating fashion, his comedy, his acting. I just want to say there was a time, a couple summers ago, actually, that I went to my brother's house on a Sunday afternoon, and, you know, USA Network airs Law & Order SVU all day long. he flipped onto it at the exact moment that Rob here was on screen with Henry Winkler,
yeah,
who I assume was the murderer in the episode. And my brother goes, "The Fonz!" At the same time, I go, "Rob Bartlett!" I think that shows
I left the wrestling fan.
There you go. From two perspectives. Yeah. that was a cool episode to do. He was another great guy. So down to earth and so warm and friendly and welcoming. And you know, it's funny. It's really good luck with people. You know, I have not met, you know, an a-hole. Thank God. You know, I've been very, very lucky. I mean, when I did The Good Wife, Juliana Margulies could not be nicer. Aww. You know, and after you did a take, she's like, is there anything else you want to do? Or, you know, and the same thing when I did Elementary, you know, after every take. You know, it's Johnny Lee Miller actually directed one of the episodes I was in. And we had this scene. This is like Doink the Clown Following Me. We had this scene. It was a dream sequence. I was in my dress blues and I was at the grave of the captain who I was replacing because he'd been shot, Aidan Quinn. Of course, he was still alive. But and Johnny Lee Miller's dialogue was something like, says, it's unusual for you to be in this dream because normally it's a clown with an axe. And I'm playing it as though it's real. I go, you know what? You're nuts. And I turn around and there's a clown with an axe. So, but Johnny Lee Miller was like, is there anything else you'd like to try? He said, you want to do one more? Do you have any ideas? I said, that's the coolest, you know. The last scene I did was a huge scene with Aidan Quinn. My police captain, over the course of five episodes, you find out in the last episode that I have been sexually harassing one of the female policemen in the precinct. And he goes to confront me at this cop bar where I'm having lunch. And we have this whole big scene and dramatic, and I deny it, whatever. And it's my last day on set, the last episode I was ever going to do. And the crew usually, when you've done a number of episodes, you've done a number of days shooting, they always say, that's a wrap for Rob Bartlett. And then, they usually give you a little round of applause, you know, the crew and whatnot. And so I walk out of the bar. We shot it, you know, on location. I walk out of the bar. And Aidan is standing there, and he has the entire company, all the grips, all the interns, all the APs, everybody is lined up on either side to my trailer. And it was like this gauntlet of people applauding as I walked back to my trailer. He had gotten people to do. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the business, is that when you can, you know, when they treat you really well. And that's what they did with me in Raw. I mean, they could not have been nicer or more supportive, you know, and so... I wish I had the chance to do it again. I would do it so much different, you know, so much more differently. But it was fun. It was fun while it lasted.
I'm a firm believer that you put out into the universe what you get back. Well, you get back what you put out.
Yeah.
So I think it's a statement and it's a testament to the sort of character that you are, that you have people lining up your trailer as you leave.
It's funny. I don't see anything extraordinary in that. To me, that's just the way I am, or the way I was brought up to be. It just, to me, it's so much easier to be nice to people than it is to be an asshole. I mean, just simply not as much energy is expelled to be nice, you know? And every once in a while, if you can do a random act of kindness, you don't know what that's going to do to somebody's day. You know what I mean? It's like whenever I drive through at Dunkin' Donuts, and I used to do this when they used to be toll booths before Easy Pass. Every once in a while, I'd say to the toll booth taker, I'd say, you know what? This is for the car behind me. No idea who's in the car behind me. And then just go, you know, and Dunkin' Donuts, a drive-thru. You know what? Here, whatever they ordered, it's on me. Just
I do that at Starbucks every so often. I try to do it once a month. It's amazing. You get some weird looks. If they see what's going on, you get some strange looks. It's almost like we're still conditioned as a society to go, what are you after? What's the catch?
Exactly. Here? Suspicion, right.
Yeah, it's suspicion. But it's just like we're more conditioned to assume everybody's an asshole rather than accept that there are some nice people. They'll never not be good people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have no idea how that makes somebody's day, you know, because I've had it done to me, you know, where all of a sudden it turns your day around, you know. And if, you know, everyone did it and you would pass it on and, you know, move it forward, it would, can you imagine how much better things would be if everyone had that in them? I mean, it just, I don't know. Christmas seems like a good day to be bringing this up.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a Christmas message, Rob. That seems perfect. I think
I'm the perfect guest. Come on.
On behalf of like Justin and myself, like we've been, you know, you talk, as Justin said, quite deprecated about your time on Monday Night Raw. But you know what? Somebody had to go first with a project like that. Somebody had to go first.
It was, and the sacrificial lamb. I dove on the grenade.
You will forever. And for that reason, like, you, regardless of whether they call back to you for other stuff, regardless of that, you are an important part of the history of a massive wrestling program presentation. You will forever be that. Nothing will ever change that, regardless of how you feel about it. Like, you were part of, you were first, you dove on the grenade, as you say, and you did it, and the world will never forget that. And you talk about turning somebody's day around. I think I speak for everybody when I say this conversation has very much turned ours around.
Thank you guys. This made my day too, which gives you an idea what my Christmas was like.
So until we next speak, I think your dinner's ready, Rob.
All right, I'll be right there. I'm on.
He is at JRH Writing. He is at Robbie O on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Merry Christmas.
You guys.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.